You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Fun movie. Convince mom and dad to take you to the theater this weekend to go see the life-affirming Lady Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, have a couple of Guinnesses first.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Well, you're going to have a few afterwards.
Well, not kids.
Well.
Yeah. No, we can't be advising children to drink.
I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, really. I'm trying to have a good sense of humor approaching this, and it's just like, I just can't even breathe.
Well, that is kind of, I think, the atmosphere that the film Lady Macbeth is intentionally trying to engender, is a frozen one of steadily escalating despair.
Well, there is a common conversation, argument, train spotting sort of mentality is to say whether a movie is a crime movie or a noir.
Yeah.
And a lot of people call noirs, or a lot of people just call gangster movies film noirs, especially if they're in black and white.
Yeah.
This is a film noir set in 18th century England.
I kept thinking it's period piece film noir.
Yeah. Like, it's a total film noir. It's The Postman Always Rings Twice.
I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like it in that context that you're just
never.
Like, wow, this is like Victorian era film noir.
Yeah.
How strange.
How very strange.
And also made me go, what a cool idea. And start thinking about other time periods that you could tell film noir. I mean, seriously, if they made a sequel to Lady Macbeth and it started with her walking into a private detective's office, we would not be surprised.
Well, and you'd know the detective was going to be dead by the halfway through the movie.
Well, yeah, he'll be like, you know, at the end, he's like I said, the time I almost died.
Right. Because, you know, a film noir is when the guy... usually the guy. I mean, it's very rare that the film noir is
centers around that.
Where the, you know, a dude does something he knows he shouldn't do.
Yes.
And it leads to doom.
Yeah, or he gets involved with a femme fatale, if you will.
And he knows he shouldn't.
He knows he shouldn't, and he makes the wrong decisions, but with the best intentions, and ends up trapped in a mire. Here, our protagonist is the... She's not the Lady Macbeth from Shakespeare. I mean, this is actually based on a book from 1865.
Really?
Yeah. I was surprised to hear that, too, because so much of the, like, ideas here are so modern. But when I was reading the synopsis of the book, I was like, wow, this is a lot like the movie they've made here. It's very, very similar.
Wow.
Which was called Lady Macbeth of the Mitensk District by Nikolai Leskov.
That's
actually already had multiple versions of it made and a play and everything. It's actually pretty well known. I'm just not as worldly as I like to think I am. So
well, have you read any Russian literature? Because I never have.
Dostoevsky.
Yeah, I've heard that it's the best.
It depends on what you read.
Well, I mean, as far as it was Patton Oswalt.
I like the movie of Anna Karenina.
I did too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Patton Oswalt.
He said that the Russian writers, that they've just suffered.
Yeah.
That they've just suffered generations and generations of suffering, and it has hammered them into being the best of all the writers in the world.
He could be right.
I have never read anything because it's all
daunting. Oh, and Stanislaw Lem, too. I've read him.
Stanislaw Lem, that's the stalker guy, right?
Yeah.
And,
Solaris.
That's the one.
Well, this is not science fiction.
No.
Like you said, this is definitely film noir.
But I can see where it's very Russian.
She's not Lady Macbeth. The title draws a comparison to Shakespeare's character of Lady Macbeth because there are definitely comparisons to be made here strongly, even though in this particular case, like I said, she is the protagonist. Catherine is her name, and she is played by relative newcomer, very young Florence Pugh.
Who is fantastic.
Yes. It's 1865 when this movie is set as well. It's in rural England, although it has a Scotland feel to it the whole time.
Well, Macbeth having that in there. Yeah. And it's very, like, you know, rocky and waterfalls and all that.
It has, it definitely kept expecting more direct references because of that as well. But she has been bought by a very rich man to be the wife to his son, who's not the father is very old and the son ain't no spring chicken either.
No.
But she, right from the beginning of the movie, she's just been married. She's brought in and everything is just cold. The husband wants nothing to do with her. He's like, I want to see you naked. And that's about it.
And then he goes to bed.
Yeah, he goes to bed. And she's like, what the fuck, dude?
I
mean, she doesn't have anyone to talk to at right. all. The only other really person in this house that she has any like day-to-day connection with, which isn't a connection, they're there together, is Anna, the black maid, who doesn't seem to think much of her and thinks even less of her as the film goes along. Not that you can blame her. But as you see, Boris, the father, and Alexander, the son, are both incredibly cold to her, to the servants, to everyone. And Alexander doesn't, like we said, doesn't even seem to have any interest in actually having sex with the woman. The woman are treated as property, and she's no exception. And when Alexander has to go away to go to, as they say, there's an explosion or something, some sort of disaster quite a distance away.
Some industrial thing. So
she very quickly starts letting down her hair as she's like, wow, no one's here to watch me. And
she tries to reach out to Anna at that point.
She does. Anna is not terribly interested.
And this is something that's very weird. She's told, don't ever go outside.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, it's all that sort of like, you know, woman in glass cases, you know, they're like, don't go outside. This house is your home. Outside is not your home. This is your home. You stay here. And the first thing she does is go outside.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck that. She goes out on the moors or wherever the fuck it is. And it's like, lets her hair down. And after a little while, she very uncomfortably forms an attraction to the groomsman, the new groomsman been played by Sebastian. Very uncomfortable because first, it looks like he just raped Anna.
It looks like it was a gang rape.
Yeah. And then he tries to rape Catherine.
Well, she kind of flirts with him.
Yeah, a little.
In front of the other men.
Yeah. But then, like, I mean, he flat out is gonna rape her.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's like, no, I want this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, awkward. Yeah. When he goes up, yeah. But, I mean, the first time she meets him.
Right. There's a certain amount of, like she doesn't know what to do.
Right.
And, I mean, he's played by Cosmo Jarvis, who apparently is a popular musician in England. I don't know who he is. That's me, though. So, but this is his first acting role, as far as I could tell. And their relationship is hot and tempestuous, and they're having sex all over the house.
Forbidden.
And everybody knows. Yeah, and not only is he the servant, but he's also mulatto, right?
And they're in her bed. It's not like she's banging him in the barn.
But
they're going to the master's bedroom.
Yeah, they are just getting it on all over the place. The master's bedroom, the barn, like a kitchen table probably, wherever.
Window.
Whenever. They don't care.
Drive-through.
Catherine is like, I'm into this. I finally know what it's like to actually, like, be treated by somebody with some degree of respect.
How old do you think she's supposed to be? Because I think she's only supposed to be,
supposed
like
to be 16, 17. Yeah. Yeah, very young. I mean, the actual actress when she filmed this was probably no older than 19 or 20.
Yeah.
She's 21 now. But as this goes along and things start falling back into place, she starts realizing, and the audience starts realizing, now that she's found this degree of freedom, she will do absolutely anything to keep that from stopping, which is not excluded to multiple murders.
Multiple murders.
Yeah. That's where this totally turns into a film noir, and where I think the acting really starts to go just to like that nth degree of like, Jesus Christ, what all of these characters are pulling off. Special note that I did not see enough critics mentioning to Naomi Ackle as Anna, who is so traumatized, she actually becomes mute by everything she's witnessing.
She's just like, I can't sit with you. And then by, you know, halfway through, she's like, I can't say anything. I can't do anything.
Everyone is so great. And it's both her and Sebastian, Cosmo Jarvis, have definitely more of more of a normal human reaction to things, if you will.
Yeah.
Whereas Catherine, it's almost like as it goes along, she goes from this character we have complete sympathy for to somebody who we're watching turn into a full-blown psychopath.
Totally.
You know, and her breathing changes. It almost seems like
her face changes.
Her eyes are turning blacker
There's a framing device that there's a lot of just day-to-day drudgery of putting on your clothes. There's Anna is just tightening her into this corset, and she's wearing the hoop skirt. There's no casual Friday on the moor.
No, there is not.
And she, and then she just is supposed to sit on the couch.
Yeah.
And just stare off into space.
Wait for her husband to come home so she's there presented when
and
he gets there.
It begins with her like nodding out on the couch. She's so terribly bored and alone. And then, as the stories progress, you see her on the couch and her hair's a little bit messed up.
Yeah.
You know? And it's
as it goes along, she's just more and more, you know, even before she starts becoming someone we can't sympathize with anymore. I mean, there's a moment in this film where you're like, no one still sympathizes with her after that. But yeah, you're watching her become more disheveled, more, I just don't give a fuck, more willing to, I mean, there's a point where when her father-in-law comes home and she can't stifle a laugh at something. And
yeah.
And she's like, oh, sorry. And she's not sorry.
She
shouldn't be sorry at that point. But
she's almost speechless for the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
There's like three lines.
Woman should be seen and not heard is the position of this household.
Yeah. This big house. It was very weird. The whole movie was very weird in that sense of like, how big is this house? Like, you never really got a front view of the place.
It felt like in its own way a castle.
Yeah.
You know, it's big and it's echoey and most of the rooms are kind of empty.
And the windows are sealed.
Yeah.
They weren't opening, closing windows. They had shutters, wooden shutters on the inside. So you can imagine just how cold it gets. Yeah,
the house is a mirror of how Catherine becomes herself. And it's interesting because at first you're like, you're really rooting for something to change for the better for this woman in the situation. But you see that she's become so affected by the abuse that she herself has been witness to and neglect that she has kind of incorporated those aspects into her own personality, you know, has become the abused, has become the abuser, if you will.
And
you know?
Universally so.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to mention the horse.
No. Jesus Christ. There are several moments in this film that you'll be like, oh my God.
I'm not on your side anymore. I wanted to be on your side. And now you're not even sympathetic. I'm not.
You start to feel sympathetic for Sebastian, who at first we're not sympathetic for at all. And then as it goes along, you're like, wow, she is just pulling your levers, man. She's just like, she knows exactly how to get you to do exactly what she wants you to do. And he's like, he's like a lost babe in the woods almost. And to her, she's just like, come here. It's time for you to give me your dick. That's your job.
Well, he's so dumb that he doesn't realize that they could have killed him just for going into the house.
Yeah.
You know, so then he goes from being that dumb to suddenly he's got like pussy power going on for him, you know, and he thinks he's bulletproof. And certainly
we all know how
pussy proof.
We've all been there.
We've all
had our little film noirs in our life.
Yeah.
We didn't necessarily murder anyone because of them, but we've definitely done some stupid shit
because
we thought we were pussy bulletproof.
And there's like the moment before she goes too far is she does the most baller move, literally.
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah.
most baller move ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, I love this chick.
Yeah,
five minutes later, you're going, oh, wow.
Yeah, her first crime, you're like, you go, girl. Yeah, and then, like, just very shortly after, you're like, oh, no,
wow.
That was a little too far. And then that's not even close to as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
I love the way this is filmed. This director, William Oldroyd, really knows how to frame a shot.
It's very painterly. It looks like an oil painting. Every frame looks like an oil painting.
And just these perspectives. And it's all yet very cold and sterile, just the same way that Catherine herself is the whole movie.
Glad to have seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, because it's just so beautiful to look at and yet so ugly to look at as it goes along. I read one critic said it dares you to turn your head away because it's so goddamn gorgeous, but the horror in front of you unfolding is just so hard to watch.
Yeah. And, you know, even though it's set, you know, over 100 years ago, you kind of feel like this could work now. I mean, it really could work as a contemporary noir, not just the.
Oh, yeah. You could set this in a lot of different places. You could see a Jim Thompson-esque version of this.
Yeah, very, very much.
You know, transpose some details. And there's obviously a lot of, like, a lot of stuff just under the surface about gender issues, about race issues, you know, what have you. But none of that dominates the sheer force of just the plot and the characters alone.
Right. Yeah. I kind of wondered, as far as the race goes, if that was some kind of meta commentary. Like, well, let's just bring race into it as well. Because, I mean, I'm going, is this what feminism is? You just steamroll over everybody that ever wasn't nice to you? Because, I mean, there's a certain amount of, like, come on, man. You know? Like, yeah. You could have just left. I mean, I know.
I mean, there's the whole thing, like, a white girl's hanging up with a half-black man and hooking up with him. And even trying, at least initially, to make some degree of friendship overtures to the black maid. So sure, like, okay, she's all right. Right?
Yeah.
Like the main character in Get Out's girlfriend. Oops.
Yeah. And she's just so young, and like, you're so sympathetic with her at the beginning.
But when she's on the spot, she's does not care. She will use her whiteness. She will play that whiteness card in a second.
And class.
Yeah.
And the class card.
For sure.
The beginning of it, before things started happening, I mean, just like the first 10 minutes of it made me think of Nick Cave. Made me think of, like, how the movie The Proposition.
Yeah, great movie.
I love, that's one of my very favorite. Total noir. Or total crime. One where you go,
total Western.
It's so dark that it's like, it's black noir.
Yeah.
But but just the way the dialogue works in that movie with Ray Winstone, you know, because Nick Cave wrote the dialogue in it.
So it all has the just beautiful affectations and like just like,
that still felt natural, you know, coming out of their mouths. Everything about that movie works for me. And I just had this vibe at the beginning, like, oh, this is going to be like a...
It felt like a Red Right Hand should start playing or something.
Yeah.
Maybe not that song. I realize that's like the one song Nick Cave is like, Jesus Christ, I have other songs, Hollywood. I have written other songs besides Red Right Hand. Okay, fair enough. Okay.
I have to say there's some stuff I felt a little... the cards were stacked against me, you know, like... The husband was so completely, I don't care about you, that I'm like, why wouldn't you care? You know, like, that was a little, I mean, there's one scene where he tells her to turn around and then he masturbates. And it's like, you know, she is your wife.
I felt like part of that was revealed later, though.
Right.
Because you find out the husband actually does have a motivation for not being that into his wife, that maybe he has some interests in another town entirely.
You're right, but still, you know, he's awfully loyal to that other town. But, I mean, it just was kind of like, I'm just so... It seems like nobody is neutral.
Yeah.
You know, there's not just... Except for Anna.
Yeah.
And then her neutrality is... You know what I mean? Like, nobody is... The stable hand guy, Sebastian, is just such a creep at the beginning. And then...
Yeah.
Like...
Everybody you have very strong feelings about one way or the other, although some of those feelings change over time with Sebastian and Catherine, and with Anna, you just feel worse and worse for her. She's sitting there. I mean, you're like, the only dog she has in that fight is like, when is Doctor Who going to show up and get me the fuck out of here? Because seriously, this is not a good time to be a black person in.
Well, even the casting, like they were all old men. They looked like in Superman, the holograms that are like, guilty.
Yeah.
They're all just these old, jowly, gross old men.
They're going to send Catherine to the Phantom Zone.
To the Phantom Zone. Yeah, I think that would not be able to hold her.
Christopher Fairbank plays the older father here, and he's one of those character actors you've seen in a billion fucking different things, including being voice talent for the Wallace and Gromit films.
He's only 10 years older than me.
He was in The Fifth Element, which we were just talking about recently.
He looked 700 years old.
He did. He looked like he was about to turn into dust if the shutters opened and the sunlight hit him.
His bags under his eyes had extra bags.
They did. His bags had bags. He had to. his eyes are so baggy, he had to pay an extra fee at the airport for them.
They couldn't put that shit in the overhead compartment. And there's one of those scenes. Okay, I'm an American. I eat with my right hand. I change the fork over from my left hand to my right hand when I'm cutting with the right hand.
Yeah, I thought it was just me.
Yeah.
I'm always embarrassed about that. I'm like, I should be equally proficient with both, and I'm not.
I always think that, like, and then when I see the European thing of, because, like, sometimes people look cool when they're, like, cutting with their right and eating with their left.
Yeah.
Or they'll just, like, do it real fast, and you just think, oh, you Eurotrash, disgusting bastard with that's the fork upside down. You know?
Oh, yeah, like, the fork upside down.
That's like, and he has, like, scrambled eggs on his lip, and he just keeps shoveling it in.
Spitting out eggs as he talks.
Just bitching at her about stuff, and she's just like,
I'm he's just so grotesque, he's Gollum.
He's with silverware.
Yeah.
Yeah. She goes crazy with Sebastian. Like, she seems to have no concept of law.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's
true. Well, just start wearing his clothes and
hanging out. I think there's
a
point where she just doesn't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, she's aware that this could all turn totally bad, but she's kind of like, anything is better than what I was living in before, which was not living.
Yeah.
You know, and to that extent, you can, okay, yeah, sure. And like I said, we root with her. We're there with her for a while, but she goes to a point where no one can root for her anymore.
Anyway. Yeah, especially when you realize that the first step of the first killing is like, oh, that was premeditated.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that at first.
You get a lot of information after the fact in this film.
And it's like, oh, I thought she was just being cold-blooded, but she was being more than ice cold-blooded.
Yeah, there'll be the first killing, you're kind of like, what exactly is happening right now? Like, it's a little confusing until later on.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go to final thoughts. Johnny, give me your final thoughts, and then give me your arbitrary rating for it.
I gotta tell you, there's a lot to talk about, but I can't say that I liked it. You know, it just was very dour. There was no music in it at all. There was no soundtrack whatsoever. It was beautifully shot. It was it seemed to fit the rules of, like, the Dogma 95, like, all natural lighting, no makeup, no costume.
It did, like, feel like that.
Like, the clothes looked like they were from a museum. They didn't look like they were made by a costumer. There were even some weird fading to where you went, oh, that's a vintage dress. You know, like, on her sleeve. Now, that might not show up on a lesser screen, but we saw it on a pretty premiere projection.
Thank you, Violet Crown.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful projection. I can't say that I liked it, but I can't say that I didn't like it either. I mean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it just kind of leaves you going, God damn.
It sucks the life out of you.
What the hell did I just watch? And unlike, like, a Robert Mitchum noir, like, there's no, wow, that guy's cool, you know? Like, there's no anti-hero to it at all. There's nothing like that. On the other hand, if you want to see, like, a Downton Abbey-type period piece, farther back, you know, Wuthering Heights-type period piece noir, you're going to be hard-pressed to find something, you know.
Yeah, it's Wuthering Heights with the bleakest of murders going on.
A complete existentialist.
It's almost a horror movie.
Almost. Yeah. And Anna kind of pushes it to that point to where, I mean, she looks ghosted by the end of it. She's ashy and speechless. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 dead horses.
Damn it, you stole mine.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. There's no way you could have known.
There's no way I could have known.
You know, I love, for a guy who's generally very optimistic and very happy and very, like, you know, always like, hey, why look on the dark side? It's better to look on the bright side, because honestly, either way you look at it, looking on the dark side is not going to change anything except for the worse. So you might as well be positive, because the people respond to that, right? It's kind of my way of going about life. I'm a very, like, you know, happy-go-lucky type of guy. Why dwell? Exactly. That being said, I love bleak, dark-as-fuck movies.
Yeah.
Totally. And literature. And I probably should read more Russian literature. And this, I really responded to this film quite a bit. I just love the way it was shot. I love the, just, there's multiple levels going on in this thing to think about. The complicated characters, the arcs for Sebastian and Catherine, I just think are fascinating. And the way the director, writer, make your sympathies change. It's really interesting, and I think there's a lot to unpack here. I'd definitely be interested in returning to this film, because, like I said, there's stuff they don't reveal to you till a little later to explain earlier stuff, and I would be curious to watch it again knowing all that. Now, that being said, I think for some people this is going to be a slog. because it's very slow moving for a while.
But it's
about the
short.
Halfway point. It's short. It's bare, under an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
But I, like I said, I really responded. Great performances. This might even make my best of the year list for me.
Wow.
I really loved it. I'm going to give this
very different people.
9 out of 10, and I'm going to borrow yours, Poorly Buried Horses. So glad I didn't live way back then. I mean, can you? I get bored after 10 minutes of, like, no stimulation.
Oh, my God.
I'm just like, I've been in a holding cell before, and I thought I had lost my mind by hour one.
Well, you know, you look at those, like, Punch and Judy puppet shows.
Yeah.
They're just two puppets hitting each other.
Yeah.
You
but
know?
Back then, that was Netflix.
That was Netflix.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.